Welcome to the Research Studio, the place where we talk to current doctoral students involved in practice-based, practice-led, or practice-informed research in the arts. My name is Dr. Mark Wilshire, and I'm based at Norwich University of the Arts in the UK. I'm an artist and academic involved in doctoral supervision, and I want to use my experience of making artworks and exhibitions to think about the different roles that creative practice can play within academic research. My guest today is Adriana Arroyo, who is an artist and researcher currently completing her first year of PhD studies at Goldsmiths, University of London. Adriana has shown her film work at international film festivals, including Berlin, Toronto, the Oberhausen Short Film Festival, and Media City in Ontario. Her work has been seen as part of group exhibitions at the Stachliche Kunsthalle Baden-Baden, Kunstverein in Hamburg, the NICC in Antwerp, MADC San Jose, and the Bergman Centre, Faroe Islands, amongst others. Her solo exhibitions include Polytropos, Turning Many Ways at the Gallery KM Berlin, and How Much Land Does a Man Need, Despacio San Jose. In 2015, she received the Emerging Artist Award from Teoretica, San Jose, Costa Rica. She currently holds a Generation Delta doctoral studentship and is a Generation Delta champion, a role in which she advocates for increased access to doctoral studies for racialized women. Welcome, Adriana.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. Thanks.
It's fantastic that you can join me today. Thank you. I thought that it would be really, the best way to start would be for you to just tell us a little bit about your project, which is based around the San Juan River on the border of Nicaragua and Costa Rica.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm working with this river, this living being between Costa Rica and Nicaragua. The river is called San Juan. And I'm trying to activate, I mean, it's a word that I'm using, but that also has some tension, activate memory, because this river has a long history of colonialism, really, of coloniality, and it's ongoing. So I'm looking, I mean, we could talk about 500 years of colonialism, but I am really looking mostly from the mid-19th century to today, spending time there and working through art practice, archives, both here in London, but also a form of archival practice there by the river, along the river, and also in San Jose and other parts of Costa Rica with this memory, let's say.
And the river is obviously crucially important as a kind of source of food and transport and a way of life for a lot of people and a lot of communities who live there. And it's also become this kind of border between the two countries. It really seems like, from what I've read of your research so far, it has become a real living, breathing kind of character in the area. Why did you choose to focus on that in particular as a way into these kind of histories of coloniality and so forth?
I have a strong bond with the Nicaraguan diaspora in Costa Rica. I mean, Nicaragua and Costa Rica are they're bound and separated by their histories. Again, I would say influenced by geopolitics, you know, to do with the relationship to the United States that Nicaragua has, because there was a revolution there that was linked to the communist revolutions in the 50s and 60s. And then, well, this was actually later on in the 80s. And Costa Rica kind of mostly served as a, you know, it has a closer relationship to the United States. And whilst there was also in solidarity, many people were in solidarity with the revolution in Nicaragua, Costa Rica also served for the US to let's say, negotiate that their own way. but I personally have a strong bond with, yeah, some people from Nicaragua. I think, you know, everyone in Costa Rica anyway has a relationship to Nicaragua, be it through tension. There's a lot of prejudice. So many people come to Costa Rica, that is a wealthier country, to work from Nicaragua. They do domestic work, agricultural work, construction work. And so there's a lot of prejudice. But I personally, one of my closest friends in Costa Rica, her stepdad is Nicaraguan and was part of the revolutionary movement. Now he lives in Costa Rica. He can't live in Nicaragua because that in turn, that the Sandinista government has become the opposite, let's say, of what they fought for. So it's very contentious. A lot of people are in exile, and my connection to Nicaragua is through them. And I find that the river embodies this connection, but it also has a very layered, I would say buried history as well, that it is very relevant geopolitically for not only the region, but actually globally, because that was the first transoceanic canal that was going to be built by Europeans and the United States to cross from the Caribbean to the Pacific. So already in the 1850s, people were being transported to go from New York to California during the Gold Rush. And this has huge consequences. So I'm very interested in political history. The river for me became a way to, or has become a way to try to, I don't know if understand, but to work with this relationship between Costa Rica and Nicaragua, and more globally as well, in terms of colonialism and how I see the colonial project having an effect for my personal history and, you know, the history of the region that I'm from.
You talked about this effort to make a canal across, to extend the river essentially towards the Pacific, and to make this crossing across Central America, which failed. Why did it fail, or why did that not come about in the end?
Yes, I mean, it has failed many times. There has been resistance. For example, in the 1850s, which was the first attempt, there was a very complicated situation where the United States wanted Central America to be a colony more formally. But they were moving away from the idea of colonization in the European empire sense. And it was more of a kind of, if we can call it commercial or mercantile, you know, what gave birth in a sense to the neoliberal project also that we are experiencing now. But also it is a very complicated landscape to work with. So I argue as well, or I'm learning, that it is also the landscape that resists colonization.
You mean the physical landscape, the geography?
Yes. Yeah. It's very what's the word in English? Indomitable. Mm-hmm. Yes, so there was an invasion of Central America in 1856 with William Walker at the helm, and this was all going on also with a tycoon from the U.S. at the time, Vanderbilt, so very well known name in the U.S. This kind of was trying to build this canal, and this just failed because of the situation, with this political situation that then was resisted as a, so this invasion from William Walker was resisted by a local Central American unified resistance movement. So then that failed, and then they tried again, and then there was the Nicaraguan Revolution. And then more recently, they tried again. They're still trying. I mean, most recently, during COVID, there was a concession given to a company from Hong Kong owned by a billionaire from there. But then during COVID, he lost a lot of money. So he moved away from it. And now the government of Nicaragua has given a concession to the Chinese government, or a proposal. So that is the latest state of it. So there's always a kind of haunting threat, and there's a canal anti-canal movement that became very political, very active after there was an uprising in Nicaragua in 2018 that was started by students, medical students, resisting the increase of healthcare costs. And this became a very tumultuous time that is now still being experienced there. But the anti-canal movement also has been very repressed. So, for example, the leader of this movement is now in exile in Costa Rica, and they lost their land. So they were already expropriated from their land in order to begin the construction of the canal, which has, you know, since failed. But these people have already been displaced.
Into this complex historical and political situation comes a researcher from Goldsmiths, and your what I think is really interesting about your approach and your sort of thesis is this exactly that kind of dialogue between different ways of knowing, different types of knowledge, different approaches to history, and so forth. So you're intending to, as you say, to kind of activate these stories, activate these memories through things like installation, through participatory art making, through filmmaking, and so on. What do you think those kind of media can bring to the situation, and how can they sort of interpret or mediate those histories?
This is a very good question, especially at the moment for me, because I have just spent 6 weeks there, and it's the first time I spent time there in the context of the PhD. So I started in October last year, and you know, after having had the process of integrating myself in the community at Goldsmiths and also being in contact with other researchers who are doing incredible projects that are not unrelated, I go there and then it is wonderful in that it demands questioning of the methods, you know, and the way in which I have been working previously. So already in 2019, when I began the idea of working with this, I wanted just to simply make a film along the river. You know, and then I went, I had a grant from Berlin, from the Minister of Culture there. And I thought I would just make a work and then have an exhibition in a gallery, you know, in the gallery, and that would be it. But then being there, I realized this is not possible. Actually, this is so layered, and I need to also place it in context with other people. And then I met Ross Gray, who's my primary supervisor at Goldsmiths, and she also has a relationship to Nicaragua, personal relationship, that, you know, that's for her to tell the story. But then I felt, okay, I thought I would never do a PhD because it's, I thought maybe the practice would then be affected somehow by the sort of academic side of things, even though I've always been interested in that. But I just felt I needed to, yeah, just stay away from it. But this project and meeting Ross also just, I just realized, okay, you know, it is a good way of doing it. And to answer your question, I don't know right now, but this is a very important stage because I think being there and having had all the input from being at Goldsmiths and in London and being exposed to so much decolonial work that's happening here, I'm at a point where I'm really thinking, well, you know, what is the best way to do this? You know, what is this demanding of me, and where do I situate myself in this? There are lots of ideas, and I think that writing is a very important one, but also oral histories. So something that I find very important and that I notice is that people really want to talk and tell their stories. And the question is how to honor that so that it doesn't become instrumentalized. Or also, you know, I find that the transfer from one place to another is very complicated. And I want to do that with as much care as possible. But, you know, I'm thinking a lot about sound. I think that voicing things, using the voice, can be very powerful. Yes, and I think what it can bring is a way of also listening to ourselves, and I think it can also allow us to educate ourselves about who we are, but through, you know, a process that is multi-layered, that means that it is not contained, because I feel the river is impossible to contain. It moves, it changes all the time. And this, I think, is very important to carry through and to reflect in the artwork and the writing as well. So how it's going to be shaped and what it actually, you know, contributes, I think is a good question that I don't have an exact answer for, but probably many answers and many possibilities right now. But for me, what's really, really valuable at the moment is that I am learning myself a lot.
I wanted to ask you about this idea of the transfer of knowledge from one context to another, because I think that's a really fascinating idea. You're based here in London at Goldsmiths, and yet you're going to be sourcing stories and telling these stories from Central America. What kind of implications will that have for the way you tell stories and the work you make, and I guess the audiences that you choose to address?
Yes. The implications. I mean, first, let's think about this transfer. I think it's a constant back and forth. And it is not, I wouldn't say sourcing, perhaps, because to me that feels a little bit like I'm extracting from one place and bringing it to the other. You know, like we do, like when I bring coffee or something like this to drink here. But it is more, I feel that the opportunity that I have right now to be in this context at Goldsmiths is allowing me to learn there. So if anything, if I may say so, you know, I'm also using the resources that are in this place that I could never have access to, in this place meaning London and Goldsmiths, that I could never have access to in Costa Rica or in Central America, to fund a PhD to research this. I just, in art, it just wouldn't exist. So in a sense, I'm more like using the resources that are here to learn about what's happening there and see how it might be possible to create a kind of living archive, you know, of the memory of this place. And that is quite complicated. And I don't take it lightly, because there are people and there are stories and beings, you know, there are crocodiles and there are dantas, tapirs, and there are, and that this is their place. And I'm, you know, ultimately, I am from the region, but I am also a guest, a visitor, and I'm learning from them and my spending time there. And really, the last time I was there, there was this crocodile that always came near where I was staying, and it's a very strong presence. So how do I transfer knowledge from the crocodile to here? I don't. I just learn from the crocodile. And the river, you know, Central America, Costa Rica and Nicaragua are tiny in comparison to other places. So we're not talking about the Amazon. But when you're actually exposed to the region, then you realize You know, each place is huge. There are so many stories. The vegetation is so dense. The trees tell you stories. There was a 300-year-old tree that I visited. And already, you know, what it holds and what it has to tell you is huge. Yeah, so it's this kind of sense that, for example, you know, a mangrove can be a play, you know, a form that can help you think through the histories, if that makes sense, as a kind of metaphorical place, but also, you know, and that shifts along the river, so that these ecologies in themselves are telling you, they hold knowledge, and you can use them as metaphor, if that makes sense.
What might a mangrove tell you?
There is a density to the mangrove. There is an opacity. There is a wetness to it. The air is thick. And that shows that there is a complexity in the history. It's also very fragile, but very strong at the same time. So it resists. It resists being colonized. It's difficult to navigate. That means that people can't just simply impose on it. And that is a history of resistance to colonialism, to being taken over. But it doesn't mean that it hasn't suffered from, you know, the process of colonial extractivism and so on. But there is, for example, a place that I have just been to, where they plywood, the company, they deforested the whole, you know, it just cut down the forest in the 80s, 90s. And so they tried to then, the Costa Rican government protected, this is a protected region since, and they try to then grow bananas or grow coffee for profit. Not possible. Just nothing grows there. Even though, you know, Costa Rica is very fertile, but there nothing will grow. So what have they resorted to now? Oh, yes, we have to plant the, you know, trees that used to grow there originally. Yeah, so the transfer of knowledge is something that is, I'm really interested in. It's not an easy place. And it is almost too much fire in it, especially at the moment, you know, this kind of, because in a way you want to keep these stories opaque. But I'm also very interested in sharing transnationally and also with my colleagues. So, for example, talking just with my friends and colleagues who are doing incredible projects, already that for me is the transfer of knowledge. And I think the PhD is something really tiny, and we're mostly actually educating ourselves rather than contributing to knowledge in this grand sense that, you know, don't play this to the examiners, because otherwise I won't.
That's actually very refreshing to hear, I think. So it sounds like you've got it in perspective. A word that you've used a few times is opacity. What do you kind of mean by that? And what's so good? What's so positive about opacity?
It is something that I'm thinking about a lot at the moment. And it was used a lot by Glisson. As a way, and it's also used a lot, or it's been developed a lot through Black scholarship. I find it a very important and also something to think about for me, because I'm talking about making visual, so uncovering histories, activating memory, but at the same time, I see the importance of keeping certain things opaque. Because when we translate and transfer and expose ourselves or these histories fully, they can be contained in a way that it also can be equated to a kind of colonialism. Also, when you keep things opaque, you're resisting being colonized. But I think that that can be also a something that I've spoken to my supervisors about, because I am trying to understand how I negotiate that also with visibility and not being erased or silenced.
That's very interesting, yeah. I wanted to ask you about another phrase that you use, which is you talk about taking an ecosystem approach to writing, which was kind of intriguing. And I wondered what you meant by that. Are you talking about a kind of polyphony, a kind of dialogic way of writing? Or what do you mean by that?
So with the writing, I find it particularly exciting at the moment. I think it's a very, very good way, or a very flexible way of telling stories. I've spoken about the oral side, so sound as well, but the writing too. And I think that the way in which the river creates habitats and landscapes and the ecology of it is actually telling me how to write. So for example, the wetlands, for example, the marshes, for example, the islands that form in the river, the places which have been completely cleared and deforested. These are ecologies that also hold the histories that I want to convey and tell. So there's already a kind of visual living environment, if you like, a kind of ecosystem that you can think of also in terms, if you think about installation art, creating an environment within the ecology of this river that changes a lot as it flows from Lake Nicaragua, close to the Pacific, all the way to the Caribbean. It changes a lot. So yes, through the writing, I want to present and activate these different environments. And I think it can help as a figure of speech as well, to have the marshes, to have the islands that form, to have the crocodile.
This is all kind of quite abstract, so let me think of a more solid way of talking about this. You've been working with some local people, so you've been working with a chef, Ruben Gonzalez, and also a local farmer, Nayudul Herrera. What have you kind of learned from those collaborations, and how's that shaped your thinking about the project so far?
Oh, it's everything, this contact. It has shaped the project indeed, and it continues to evolve. I mean, I just spent some time with Ruben, so he's very, very active in the region. And it was actually through his archive of, he's a non-academic researcher, and by that I mean he's looking at his history, the history of the region where he's from. So he's really at a place in the river called Boca San Carlos, where you can, it's like crossing the road and then you're in Nicaragua. So he goes to, I was just there, and he goes across to get malanga, which is a root vegetable, to cook for dinner. So that he goes across means he goes to Nicaragua to get it. And there's this constant communication back and forth. Very many complicated things happen there, because it's a passage for drugs, for now there's illegal gold mining going on there, and many other things I don't want to speak about right now. But through meeting Ruben, I also meet the river, and I meet the trees, and I also learn about how he cooks, for example, is an archive beyond his own life, in a sense, because it's ancient. So, for example, Ailton Krenak speaks about rivers as carrying a non-linear time. So there is no future, and they carry, because they, the present is the future in a sense, because they are already carrying the future in them. And so through the people who have, I have met there, that is in a sense, that is the knowledge, that is what we are also trying to all bring together. I was in a part of the river just about 2 months ago, which is on the Caribbean, right on the northern Caribbean of Costa Rica, southern Caribbean of Nicaragua. And there I met some incredible people. It's the first time I went there. It is quite complicated to get to because there's not really a road that goes there. So there are many waterways. And it is very unusually it's not touristy. For Costa Rica, this is by now very rare. And the people that I met there are now part of this constellation that seems to be shining bright and growing for my project. It's an amazing constellation that, and we are also all trying to work together from our different fields and perspectives.
And so you've just come back from this trip. And I appreciate you're at a fairly early stage in the research still. But could you give us maybe an idea of maybe what your end result might look like in terms of installation or artwork or what have you? What kind of things might we see in a couple of years' time when you come to present your findings from all of this, alongside writing and everything we've talked about so far?
Yes, well, there are many ideas at the moment and things that I imagine. I am increasingly curious about working with sound. So recording, there's a journey from Lake Nicaragua, so very close to the Pacific side. So if you imagine Central America being a very narrow, like a waste that goes in. And so the river starts at Lake Nicaragua and then goes all the way out into the Caribbean. And there's a journey that you can do. And the sound is very powerful. I haven't done the whole journey yet, but I finally found out how it is possible to do it, because it's not something that people do very commonly. It has to be done carefully because of the political situation in Nicaragua right now. So I can't really, for example, take a camera there. But you know, on the Costa Rican side, I can work fine. So I imagine, I'm imagining a sound recording from field recordings. Also, I am thinking about a film, a 16mm film, that would happen. It has to happen on the Costa Rican side because it wouldn't be safe or allowed really to film on the Nicaraguan side. And also I have an exhibition, I haven't been invited to do an exhibition in a space in Costa Rica. And this will be, it's a very wonderful large space. So that's a big, it has a lot of scope, you know, in images. I mean, there is the archives here in London are deep, let's say, you know, things I have found. So re-photographing, you know, putting all of this together, I imagine in this exhibition, for example, in San Jose, would be a part of the PhD, but also something that I am beginning to understand and that is very liberating, is that the PhD doesn't have to be something contained by an exhibition or a final product. That is what, you know, perhaps I had been used to doing previously, is, you know, I research a project and then I have an exhibition and that's it. The beauty of this is that it can be much more dispersed, so it can take different forms. So we're thinking also about the possibility of building a kind of archive in one of the communities where I'm working. And that doesn't necessarily have an output here in London or in Europe, but it is part of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of freedom there, isn't there? So the PhD, kind of the examined PhD is one thing, and it might comprise all sorts of different elements. And then also there might be all sorts of different elements which never even make it into your PhD, but you do them anyway along the way. Yeah. I think that, again, that's quite a kind of a healthy attitude to take towards research like this, and not to always be focused on the end result, if you like.
No, not at all. I think that, on the contrary, for me right now, I mean, we will see what happens in a year after my upgrade, you know, after I've done my upgrade. Now I have to do that. So we will see what happens. And also, it is my instinct to want to make things. And, you know, this kind of materiality is also important when you have been reading and theorizing. For me, it's also a very... it's key, and I learn and understand in a very different way, and it activates, it creates a different space. So, you know, I also have, for example, collaborated with dancers quite a lot. Two of my main collaborators, Gabriela and Vanessa, are dancers. So we have done workshops together in the community. So, for example, these things are very exciting for me. But there is no, you know, you don't hold on to, so there's an ephemeral quality to the experience. It's not performance, but it is also a way of sharing with people in a life situation.
Looking ahead, so you're currently you are aiming to complete around the end of 2028, I believe. So looking ahead to that time, what kind of impact do you hope your project will have, both in London and also in the San Juan region? And do you think you'll be able to have an impact on artistic conversations around colonialism, ecology, and so on?
I hope so. It's the beginning of the work. That's what my supervisor, Julia Salma, says. She's an anthropologist. She says it's just the beginning, but I do hope so. I mean, it definitely has an impact on me, so that's a start. And the conversations that I have with my family, and for example, I went to one of the regions with my brother, so we are already learning together, and I feel that is impact. Talking about the river to my family, to my friends. The river San Juan is very mystified. It's like, oh, it's dangerous to go there. Or so talking to my colleagues also in art, I think that is already an impact, however small, you know. And I'm also very interested in continuing to speak about Central America here in London and in Berlin, because it is really rarely spoken about, even in the context of decolonial work. Central America is often not mentioned, and the work that is being done there. So I will continue to raise my hand and say, hi, how about this? Or, you know, also, I'm now part of the Center for Art and Ecology at Goldsmiths, so that means that my research is integrated within that, and that means that then this tiny region in Central America is also part of that. And I hope that continues to have an echo, yes. And in the region, I hope that the research is just there and available to people as well, and that it gives me a platform to be able to have conversations and grow those conversations with people who are already doing work there.
I mean, we've kind of touched on this already, but and again, this is one of those big questions of a PhD. What do you see as being the key things which this kind of practice-based approach can bring to the table, as opposed to just archival research and kind of a written output?
It's a form of embodied knowledge, art practice. It goes through the body, and so does history. When I am reading in the archives at the British Library words from people who speak about the landscape as fetid and primitive and inhospitable, it goes through my body, through my organs. And artwork, making art, working with clay, working, re-photographing those things, trying to re-find spaces within those photographs or illustrations that these colonists drew, finding hints of existence of my ancestors there through re-looking, through looking again, remaking or making, through listening to the landscape, trying to understand what is trying to tell you in all the noise of erasure, the noise of silence. That is where art practice can contribute. To me, it's hugely exciting that there is this possibility. How much impact it has, really in such a complicated world where power is held by very few people, probably very, very little impact, really, art practice, really. But we are educating ourselves, and maybe it takes tiny, tiny drops of at least understanding for one person. I mean, that is a huge privilege to have. And I think that art practice, can allow for it. I don't know that it changes things hugely, but it's certainly to have this freedom in this world where that is being contested day to day is quite significant.
And how do you think you have changed in the last year?
I have to say that having dialogues with my colleagues and now friends at Goldsmiths has been, transformative, definitely. I am more aware of their positioning, also in relationship to my own. And also these 6 weeks that I had recently by the river, it was really profound and very transformative. So how exactly I have shifted, I suppose that will all come out as I write. But I do feel that it's a process of learning, and learning to look again, and learning to be more present and to be very awake, I think, in this time in history. It's like we can't really afford to be zombies. And that's something that, I am energized by. It can be very tiring, though. So we also have to, I think, look after ourselves and rest in the meantime. But I mean, when you ask how you have changed, I don't know. It's hard to take that distance. But I know that things are being transformed and that I am learning as I go along.
Brilliant. I think we should stop there. So thank you so much, Adriana. It's been great to hear about your project today. Great to meet you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you too.